hearing this?
Anybody hear that?
How can we possibly have the slightest idea what to expect?
Well, we're back.
Hold on to your butts.
Welcome to the Jurassic Park Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Jost, and we're here to discuss all things Jurassic, including the movies, TV shows, music, toys, and more. In episode 376, we're going to take advantage of the "and more" part of that intro, and Tom Jurassic is back once again to discuss Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. Tom joined me to talk about Monarch, Legacy of Monsters, which is on Apple TV. If you don't know, that's the Godzilla and Kong Monsterverse show on Apple TV. And now that we're back here with a new film, we thought, hey, let's do a deep dive into some of the most fun lore aspects and, of course, the battles from the latest film. We're going to give you our general spoiler-free thoughts first, and then we'll give you a big spoiler warning, and we'll issue that warning, give you plenty of notice, and then we'll hit those big-time spoilers for the entire film. So feel free to listen until that moment if you haven't seen the film, or if you've seen the film, enjoy the whole episode. And of course, while you're listening to this episode, hit us up on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, TikTok, and of course over on YouTube to continue the conversation from this episode. And as always, please check out our weekly live streams over on YouTube discussing all the latest Jurassic news from around the world. Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. EST, each and every week. Stay tuned to our social feeds and that live stream to hear probably what we'll be discussing on the next episode. I'm not sure yet, but we'll find out soon enough. But for now, let's go ahead and join in that conversation about Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. Switching things up today. We're not talking Jurassic. We're talking Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. So if you're not familiar, myself and the one and only Agent T talked about Monarch, The Legacy of Monsters for a bunch of weeks. Like, what was that, 10 weeks or a little bit around there? Agent T, if you don't know, is also the one and only Tom Jurassic, who goes, it's a man that goes by many names. How are you doing, Tom?
Yeah, I am good, thank you, dude. Right off the top of the show, I'm going to say thank you for paying for my ticket to see this film. This was amazing.
Stop. I just wanted you to see the film so we could record about it. That's all.
I was like, so Brandon and I were talking and I was like, I'm probably not going to see it on release day because I can't afford it, but I have a voucher that will let me get a cheap ticket next week. And then, like, I put a joke, unless you want to pay for my ticket. And then I get an email from PayPal saying you've got money. And I was like, what?
Hey, man, I'm here to support our contributors as best as possible and to give our audience, you know, a great experience. So you're welcome. You're welcome. But did you enjoy your theater going experience this time around? Like, give me a quick brief thoughts. Maybe later we'll dive into some spoilery stuff or whatever. But give me your thoughts.
I absolutely love this film. There were like so many moments throughout where I felt that I had the biggest grin on my face. Or, like, I was laughing at things, and it was just really good. Like, I was sat there midway through, and I was sort of like, this is what going to the cinema should be like. This is just a great, fun experience, and it was really solid all the way through.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I caught back up. Obviously, I don't really need to catch up. I watch these movies all the time, these monster movies. And we just, you know, we just covered Monarch. So, and if you don't know, it's on Apple TV Plus, and it goes like from the first movie, the first Godzilla, mm-hmm. between a few different other movies or whatever. So it kind of tells some stories in between with some different characters and some similar companies and things. But I, you know, I rewatched all the movies around that time too, a bunch of times. So then I rewatched them again. And in my Letterboxd review, if you're not on Letterboxd, join up, follow me, follow whoever. I know there's a bunch of Jurassic fans on there. But I forget which movie I did it for. I think it was King of the Monsters. I just wrote like cinema. That was my, like, my you know, I've watched it a bunch of times, and I just wrote cinema in there. I'm like, I felt like that's necessary, because when I watch that movie, I'm like, wow, this is just a complete spectacle. And that goes for most of them, you know, to be honest. So I just love the spectacle of this franchise, this MonsterVerse franchise. It's so much fun to watch. I'll admit, you know, Godzilla versus Kong, the film before this, I was, I guess, lukewarm-ish on upon first viewing. It kind of grew on me, you know, as time went on. But I still think it was. I don't know. It's to be foreseen. I don't know if it's last on my list or this one will be last on my list. But that, again, that's. I know, I see your face, and I'm sorry, I apologize, but it's just such a great list. You know, you've got Godzilla, which is a really, really awesome film for me, Kong, Skull Island, which is just incredible, and King of the Monsters, which I absolutely love, and Godzilla versus Kong was like, it took the franchise in a different direction, right? And I think that's the kind of direction that, like, Jurassic fans are always afraid of, right? When you talk about the Jurassic franchise, it's like, you're talking about this grounded story that's, like, told through science, and there's a lot of talking and not a lot of action. And then you go into the Jurassic World franchise and you're like, boom, explosions and, you know, military and all kinds of crazy stuff, hybrids.
It's the kind of direction that would need star power like Scarlett Johansson to really sell it.
I think so. When you get that, you know, a Marvel character in there, it might be necessary. Actually, you know, you can't let go one Marvel character and then not bring in another one. You have to continue with the Marvel. But I think that's the direction a lot of Jurassic fans are always afraid of. But with this franchise, like, I don't care, dude. Like, it's another installment in a crazy franchise that I absolutely love, that just does the most bonkers stuff. It's off the wall every 10 seconds, and I love it for that. So while this film and the last film are lower on my list, I still love them, and I still really, really enjoy them. And this film in particular, Godzilla X Kong, it was just like, again, a spectacle, and I rely on this series to give me frames of a film that just look like art and are just like, oh my God, like, I can't believe that I'm witnessing this on screen. It's so, so cool. There's like several slow motion shots in this movie that I'm like, let's keep lingering. They were lasting forever, but I'm like, let's keep going. This is so much fun to just watch. So I had a blast with it. I think, like, it's slower paced throughout most of the movie, but man, does it kick into gear in that last portion, and it is just incredible and off the walls and so much fun to watch, dude. It's crazy.
It's just, I think that this, what I really like about this film above GVK, and I actually think this is one of my favorite entries in the MonsterVerse so far, is that it does the balls to the wall chaos that you have in GVK, but it's driven much more by a story this time around. So it kind of all has connective tissue that makes sense, and they really lend it more towards the mythology that they've been trying to build across these films, which I think is quite cool.
Yeah, it's like they're just one-upping themselves with the mythology and, like, what these movies are actually about, and it's wild. Like, you know, it started off such small scale in Godzilla, you know, honestly. It's a massive movie, and there's so much happening and big monsters and everything, but the scale of the story is so much smaller. And I think I could probably settle on this one being better in my mind than the last one, because of, like, certain things. I think, like you said, that storytelling and the lore and everything and how deep everything goes, that's awesome. I love that so much. I love, like, seeing this world expand. There's a part of this story that I've said since Kong Skull Island that I was like, man, I want to know more about this. And they did it. Mm. Like, they're doing it in this movie, and they're really heavily laying into it. And I just love that so, so much. You know, they give you this lore and this history that's really, really cool. And also, they bring in new characters that are just
Incredible. I think my review for this movie was just short and sweet. I didn't feel like typing out a whole thing because like it didn't necessarily need it. Maybe I'll expand upon it in like a second review or something. But like my review for this one was, I loved Guardians of the Hollow Earth because this movie brings in a new character named Trapper who is just Star-Lord. And it's so funny. Like
I love the bromance.
Yeah. He's such a great character. I love that new character. He, like I'm saying, he brings like a Star-Lord energy to him. They keep blasting like classic rock music and stuff like that. And he literally like flies in on some ships. And one of the, like the new redesign of the Heave is just, or the Heaves is just like, what's that planet?
Novacore.
A Novacore, yeah, ship. It's like exactly that, like that. And I'm like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And the comedy of it all, it's just, he's such a Star-Lord character. And I think that was such an awesome mix. I mean, if you're going to go over the top with basically spaceships on Earth or in Earth, you might as well just go completely off the wall. And I love it. It's so much fun. I was laughing, like, I just loved it. I love these characters. And, you know, I've seen a lot of the reviewers and like critics and stuff say like, oh, this movie doesn't, you know, do anything for the characters and we don't care about them or anything, but I care. I still like following, you know, these characters. Gia, is that her name? From the last movie, like she carries over and I like following her story and her doctor mom. I'm terrible with all these names. You know that. but like I like following these people up because this movie franchise does something really cool where it'll introduce like a few characters and then like at least like two of those characters will carry over to the next film. It'll introduce a bunch of new ones and then like two of those new ones will carry over to the next one. And they keep doing that like time and time again. And I love that. Like, so I imagine like to see it. I know, right? But so glad we got him in two films and that was really cool. It was just it gives a little bit of it just makes me feel for these characters and makes it a little bit more impactful when Serizawa does what he does in King of the Monsters. And I'm excited to see who eventually crosses over into the next film and if they'll kind of keep that trajectory.
It's gotta be Trapper.
I would hope so. Trapper's so cool. He's great. I didn't expect much from Dan Stevens. Like, I don't know much about him. I think the only thing I really saw him in was like Beauty and the Beast. I think he played the Beast or something.
Yeah.
So like, I don't really know much. I mean, I don't even think I saw him in that. Maybe at the end, I forget. But so he's a great character. And I heard him talking about Trapper in interviews. I was like, sounds like a cool character, whatever. And I'm like, yo, this guy's great. I love it. So yeah. But is there anything we can say? Because I don't want to spoil too much, but maybe we should just dive in the spoilers. But would you have anything else to say before?
I was literally about to say, are we really doing a non-spoiler episode when I have a bullet point list of spoilers in front of me to talk about?
No, we're not doing a non-spoiler episode. I just wanted to get it out there just in case anybody's like on the fence, you know, before seeing it.
No, we're going all in, Brad.
Let's do it. Let's go in on spoilers. So let me give you just like, you know, 10 seconds or so to pause your thing, turn it off, skip ahead, whatever you got to do. Appreciate you being here. Love you being here. Thank you so much. But we're going to talk spoilers.
Spoiler territory.
Right now. Let's do it. So what do you got? What's number one on your bullet points?
Okay, so I'm happy to just breeze through this list.
Do it. Because I got no notes, like I said, and I'll just recollect it in my head here. So
what I really love is how we kind of start this film by seeing Kong struggling to settle into the Hollow Earth.
Yeah.
So obviously in the events of GBK, he moves into the Hollow Earth and you kind of see him struggling with finding his place in this new home and still really looking for the family that he thinks is out there, but he doesn't know for sure if they are out there or not. And I made a note here, and this is something that I think is prevalent throughout this film, which is the CGI is so emotive. Like, there were a couple of moments where I actually cried during this film because I could really empathize with how they were communicating emotion with the characters.
Yeah.
And I think there's some really powerful moments throughout that really do that well.
Yeah, you know, this movie has multiple scenes where there's literally no talking. It's just animals communicating, or monkeys or whatever, you know, like apes. So I thought that was really cool. And you can definitely get exactly what everybody's saying based off of, you know, just emotions and their face and stuff. Lincoln went with us to this movie, and he like leaned over. He's like, what's wrong with him? And I'm like, he's lonely, aww, dude. He's lonely. He's got nobody. He's just, you know, he's just out there being the king, but he's got nobody to hang out with. So that was pretty sad. And then like, oh, dude, he finds, I'm probably skipping ahead, but he finds that little, you know, the little baby Godzilla, or not Godzilla, Kong. And, but I don't know what, if he has a name or not.
There is a name for that. Let me find it.
Is it like on a toy box or something? Is that where it came from?
it was. So it's Suko.
Suko. Okay. All right. So Suko
is apparently the son of Scar King.
Oh, okay. I didn't necessarily get that from the movie, but I thought maybe due to the hair color on the ape, I was like, okay, maybe it is related to that monkey. I did think that at one point, but there was nothing given to me, I don't think, in the movie that really told me that. But dude, when he showed up and was like really sweet and like kind of shy and scared, and I think that shot is like in the trailer too, I was like, oh, they're gonna be best friends, this is gonna be awesome. And then dude, he becomes a vicious monster, and one of my favorite parts of this movie was Kong picks him up and starts slapping the other apes with him. I was like, I was laughing so hard. This movie is so funny. I couldn't believe it. It was hilarious, dude. He picks up a tiny babyish monkey and just starts slapping the other monkeys and beating them and pushing them off cliffs and stuff. It was incredible. Like, what in the world was I watching? I loved it, though.
So we should give some context here. So something that happens that leads to the other apes is essentially there's a sinkhole that opens in the Hollow Earth, and it shows the subterranean part of the Hollow Earth, which Kong and Monarch haven't been able to explore yet. So it's really interesting because this is set a few years after the events of GVK, and you get the idea that Monarch has explored a lot more of the Hollow Earth, even though they say they've not explored all of it. They've got quite a bit of it mapped out. It's kind of become quite mundane. So you get some characters who are quite bored at the Hollow Earth outpost. It's sort of lost its appeal of being something new to some extent.
Yeah.
And then you get this moment where this sinkhole opens, revealing this new part of the Hollow Earth, and that's kind of the catalyst for a lot of the story later on as well.
What did you
think about that and the idea of this like subterranean part of it?
I love that it was like you unlocked a new level, you know, like in a video game. It like literally like opens up and then like it comes up on the screen as if you just like hit a cutscene in a video game, and just like it shows your character walking into a new space, and it kind of pans out and the character's looking around. I was like, this is just a video game. It's so funny. But I was like, whoa, like I'm thinking about this movie. I'm thinking about Monarch, because like Monarch had a whole Axis Mundi, like a whole new layer, which was, I don't know where still. And like then there's the Hollow Earth, and then there's a subterranean. What was it? Subterranean what?
Like Hollow Earth. So it's a subterranean layer of the Hollow Earth.
Well, it said it like on the screen. I wasn't sure what the exact title was. But I thought that was really cool. It was like kind of. I felt like upon subsequent viewings, I think it'll like clear up a little bit. But like, the geography of it all was slightly confusing, just because like there was also the Iwi people. Is that what their name was? And then their whole lair and stuff, and then also like webs that they had to go through, and it just like opened up to it like a brand new layer and stuff.
Their layer, as far as I interpret it, is in the Hollow Earth. It's just camouflaged. So it's there, but it's like a camouflage part of the Hollow Earth that other people can't see.
Yeah, it was a little confusing, and I didn't know if it was like in that subterranean level or not. But yeah, that's besides the point. I thought that was a cool section, and you know, the fact that that there was like a whole lore story to like why all the other apes were kind of like locked away. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, so this is something I wrote about. I'm going to just highlight the bits of my notes that we have touched on so I can keep track of it. So I like how actually what we sort of get here really is a build up to Kong encountering Scar King for the first time. So it's handled really well because, like you say, you get the introduction of the Iwi people and you slowly get the characters who are in the Hollow Earth. So Eileen, Trapper... what's her name, the girl? Was it Jai?
Gia,
that's it. Gia. And then also Bernie, who's back in this. They are slowly picking through this mythology with the Iwi people and learning more about Gia's purpose, this prophecy that she's a girl who is meant to bring back Mothra to deal with...
So cool.
Yeah. It was awesome to eventually deal with this threat. And this threat is Scar King. And they then explain that Scar King was actually banished into the Hollow Earth by Godzilla. And he was trapped in this kind of dungeon area so he couldn't escape because his desire had always been to go to the surface world and destroy it. And he kind of is, in a sense, a king who subjugates the other primates. So we see a lot more of Kong's people. And he's sort of like your old school dictatorial monarch, in a sense, who is not the science organization, but royalty, who is like looking after, well, not looking after really, actually kind of
not looking
ruling
after them,
over people with an iron fist, which is quite interesting. So they do a really good job of slowly building up his mythology. Before they reveal him, to essentially give you the idea that this is similar to Ghidorah in King of the Monsters, in terms of the fact that this is somebody who is an ancient part of the legacy and is very interwoven with the tapestry of Godzilla's history and the history of Kong's people as well. However, before we get to this point, we do get a parallel story. So this is happening inside the Hollow Earth. And then outside the Hollow Earth, we see that Godzilla is taking on titans that humanity can't fight. So you have Godzilla fighting against Scylla, which was a really, really cool sequence. It was over very quickly, but it was cool.
Which one was Godzilla that? Who was that?
Titan. That was the like crusty one.
Oh, yeah. The like crab
the
looking.
The tentacles that came out of his mouth.
That was very cool.
Yeah, so you get a fight sequence with Scylla, you get Godzilla sleeping in the Colosseum.
That's
which
great.
Is very, very cool. and what I liked here was you get a little sense of the fact that Titans are still a present threat in this world. So you see little bits of Monarch tracking lots of other Titans. You get a few name drops for some of the other Titans that we haven't seen yet. And it's quite cool how you get this idea that actually... although we've had this catalytic event in King of the Monsters where Godzilla is essentially the king of the monsters, there are still Titans who are fighting against Godzilla and he's still having to deal with those threats and humanity is kind of just witnessing them. So I thought that was quite cool. What were your thoughts on sort of where we pick up with Godzilla?
Well, I thought it was cool. It kind of... it went back to the beginning of everything with these monsters.
Yeah.
You know, like in Godzilla 2014... what are they called? The Mutos were like, you know,
Mutos,
feeding off of like nuclear facilities and stuff like that, and they were trying to basically power up, just so they could, you know, reproduce and stuff. And then in this one, and also they showed a lot of that in Monarch too, of different facilities and stuff like that where monsters would power up. And this one, they're like, well, Godzilla needs to defeat these, like kind of take their powers and then feed off the power plant. And I loved like him going up against Tiamat. That was really, really cool.
Yes.
And just like, you know, seeing the pink kind of like, I don't even know, like seep into him and just become a part of him. And then he explodes out and they're like, oh my God, check him out. He's powered up. He's leveled up. I thought that was really fun. That was cool. He's just like leaner and stronger and faster. Yeah. And I thought that was awesome.
It's really cool how they explain that whole sequence with Tiamat, because they're saying that it's at the point where like a lot of radiation from space is essentially converging on the planet, and that's what Tiamat uses to power up. So Godzilla kills Tiamat and then goes into Tiamat's lair because that's where all that energy is, and he's able to go in and absorb it. So it's quite cool having that connection.
It was a bit different than what I expected, though, because I had mentioned to you we had talked about toys for this movie, yeah. And the toy for Godzilla, it has like an outer shell, like a rubbery outer shell. Not that one. That one's incredible. But it was a smaller one that had like a rubbery outer shell, and it was like regular Godzilla. And then I think like inside was like the pink Godzilla. So like to me, you know, the toy was basically saying like Godzilla is going to shed its skin and become smaller, more agile, because when we see it in the trailer, he's just running and just jumping and doing all this crazy stuff, where you would think, okay, a smaller, more agile Godzilla could do that. But that wasn't really the case in this. It didn't like shed its skin, which I thought would have been really cool. Hey. What?
All I can say is Bradley.
Oh, what?
You've been collecting Jurassic for how long? How often do things like the Lego sets actually depict what happens on screen?
This,
do you remember this that felt, Cretaceous set?
Yeah, this felt more, it just felt reliable. And it felt, because of what we saw in Monarch too, they were talking about shedding and stuff like that. There was a whole scene where a shedded monster, like, you know, skin was there. So I thought they were layering in those concepts to say like, ooh, guess what? Godzilla's going to shed his skin and then be this ultra powerful one underneath.
Just imagine finding that, like, floating somewhere.
Dude, no, it would just be like laying in the Colosseum or something like that. Like,
yeah.
Sorry, no tourists today. It's just a dead monster skin here. But yeah, that didn't happen. But I thought it was really cool how they actually did it.
Yeah.
And I love the look. The look was awesome. Was really, and Godzilla, dude, was doing stuff that you've never seen him do before, like leaping off of, you know, what do you call it, mountains, and just diving into the ocean and jumping and running, and it was just awesome to see. Yeah, it was so awesome to see.
Oh, I can't remember where it was, but he jumps off of the iconic mount, like, cliff.
Mm-hmm. It's Gibraltar, I think it was.
Yes, Gibraltar. And that's like so iconic because there's loads of military bases and things inside that cliff.
Oh yeah, I don't know, I don't know where that is in relation to
Egypt.
But like,
I managed to hear each other.
Let me zoom out. Oh, okay. Okay. I mean, it's far, right? Yeah, it's, I don't know where's Egypt is. It's all the way. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's pretty far away, but it's like, it's not, I don't know, it's about where I guessed. I don't know, it's like at the tip of basically Spain right there, right? And all the way to Cairo. That's kind of far, but the way that they were yelling at each other was if they could see each other in the distance or something. It was really funny.
Right, okay Brad. We've hit that point. Are you ready for your mind to be blown?
Hit it, dude. Let me hear.
So this film parallels Monarch way more than you realize.
Ooh,
because
all right,
what we have in this film is Eileen going to Bernie because he's thinking outside of the box and he's doing things that they wouldn't try, whereas their analysts are stuck in circles. So bear in mind, he was at Tokyo, but Monarch didn't hire him afterwards because they thought his conspiracy theories, his way of approaching problems, was too extreme. Who does that remind you of?
What? I don't remember his name.
Lee?
Is his name Lee?
That's, well,
I was talking about their
dad, but yes, we'll go with them. Basically, I think it's really interesting because that shows that this is still Monarch, that despite dealing with all of these things,
to
think outside of the box.
The dad, what was his name?
Yes,
Hiroshi.
I'm deliberately,
right? It was Hiroshi.
I can't remember it either. Yeah, it was Hiroshi. But yeah, I found that to be a really interesting parallel, because that kind of shows that Monarch as an entity is still trying to think about these things framed logically when it's anything but.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I mean, that whole show was like, it also had Tim, who was thinking kind of about these kind of topics and couldn't get the support
Dude,
inside.
If Tim had just like appeared in a background frame, I would have lost it.
Let me ask you, the person who was part of the Iwi tribe who came out of like the temple or whatever, they were purposefully obscuring that person for quite a while as they were like slowly walking out, to the point where I was like, are we going to get a reveal of somebody here that like is going to blow
you,
our
like,
mind?
It's going to be Keiko.
Yeah, dude, I honestly thought it would be or something, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
And I thought like, oh, there's going to be a big reveal, but it didn't hit me or anything. So I was like, oh, okay, I don't know this person.
I was quite surprised by the lack of a reveal because I was expecting them to reveal that it was Gia's mom. That was kind of what it felt like it was building up towards.
Yeah, I definitely thought something. Yeah, but I thought that was a really cool sequence. And the fact that they had their own like temples and it was really cool. The whatever they were doing down there, the colors and the way that they can use the gravity and that mesh material, whatever.
They're
it was all
way
really
more
cool sequence.
Than all of us.
Yeah. Just speaking without here. Let's do a podcast in Iwi tribe way. Did you get that? Did you hear me? If you,
you
don't realize,
what do you mean we're finishing now? Okay, cool.
Yeah,
right.
We're done. I said, let's wrap it up, dude.
So I think one of the biggest standout moments for me throughout this is the way they handle Kong. It very much is a Kong story, but what I absolutely love is throughout you get the juxtaposition of Kong being kind versus Scar King being brutal. So you get the moment with Suko, where he shares his food with him, and you can tell that that animal has never had anyone be kind to it before because it's kind of really hesitant. That was one of the moments that made me cry because I was like, this is so emotional and they're literally not saying anything.
Well, no matter how many times
kind of emotion.
Yeah. No matter how many times that little guy, like, you know, stabbed them in the back, like he didn't care. He was like, I'm going to be here, dude. Like, I'm going to be here for you. You know, we're going to go where we need to go and you're going to show me how to get there and I'm going to, you know, stick up for you and help you out. So I thought that was pretty nice.
It was, that way they handled that relationship, Asuko having somebody standing up for him for the first time was really nice. And then I like how you get that again when they get to sort of the kingdom of Scar King with him actually standing up for one of the primates who's getting hurt for not carrying enough weight quick enough. And then I loved how you had Kong stand up to Scar King and essentially get the upper hand on him before Scar King forced Shimo out, because I kind of like how that perfectly encapsulates his character, right? Which is he's so focused on causing other creatures pain and suffering that ultimately he has to use Shimo, who he controls through pain, in order to win that fight. It just felt really, really interesting in terms of how they communicated that. And then I also, in the same breath, love how Shimo is being controlled through pain, because that shows A, how evil Scar King is, that's how he's controlling her, but also B, it sets up that a lot of these creatures aren't naturally evil. In this case, she's being controlled, and that's why she is manifesting like that, but it's not because she wants to be like that.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. I mean, the Scar King part was, I just loved how the Scar King came out. And the stature, the way it stood, everything about it was different than Kong. And it created such a creepy vibe, a terrifying vibe. And just seeing Scar King use that bone spine thing and just whipping around. And it was such a cool, like, weapon. And the stature of that monster was awesome. I just loved it. And then that little spike thing at the end controlling Shimo was you know, it was sad, and you could definitely tell that thing was doing it because not because it wanted to, but because it was being made to.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, confirmed at the end of the movie where Shimo's like, hey, is it okay? Like, can I oh, I can freeze this dude over here. All right, cool. And it's just like, you know, it was just like looking for like somebody to tell it what to do. And I thought that was pretty cool. Also,
the thing I found, sorry,
you talk about it because I was going to change it for a second.
The thing I find most interesting is I think she, now I should pretext this by saying I do not know the original Toho mythology of Godzilla as well as I should. And so I may be about to say something really infuriating for fans. But to me, Shimo looks like a very similar species to Godzilla, especially in terms of the like head structure. It looks really similar.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I thought that as well. I was like, oh, here comes the bad Godzilla. And because they had the bad ape and they got the bad Godzilla together. So I thought this is going to make for an epic battle. And yeah, you're right. I don't know. I just felt bad for it. I wonder what the future of that monster is going to look like here, you know, because Godzilla is, you know, usually set out to destroy everybody else, you know, to make sure nobody else is on this planet, despite all those monsters still being on the planet. I thought that was kind of interesting. But I guess if they're dormant and not really doing anything, Godzilla's not going to go after them. So I'll, you know, I'm excited to see what happens with this one, though, because it is so big and it is so much like Godzilla.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of potential to take it in an interesting direction, especially as we know that Adam Wingard has already got a third one planned as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's quite exciting to think about what that might be. What direction were you going to take us off in?
I love that. What was it? Suko? Is that the name of the little monkey? You know, came back and grabbed the axe and took it to Kong.
Oh,
and,
dude,
you know, you kind of flew into battle, wielding it for a second. It was just so, I thought that was great seeing that little guy just like get into the battle and help out in a pretty, you know, helpful way. I thought that was awesome.
It was really cool, actually. And talking about helpfulness, you've led me with a nice segue into something I wanted to touch on, which is I think it's really cool how in this we see Kong leaning on the humans a lot more for help. So you see him obviously getting the exoskeleton arm, which is really cool. You see them taking out his infected tooth and giving him a like polycarbonate tooth. And what I think is really cool about that is it feeds into the broader context of the monsterverse, right, of it being a shared ecosystem. So you see this throughout with reference to us coexisting with Titans, but you also get like nature coming back after Titan attacks and that kind of thing. So the idea of this interconnected ecosystem is a very, very prevalent theme throughout these films, and that felt like such a cool microcosm for it, because up until this point it's been very much the humans dependent on the Titans, but now you see the Titans dependent on the humans as well. And I thought that was quite a cool deviation to that theme.
That was pretty cool, to be honest. I thought, I actually thought while watching it, when did they...
You can tell I went deep with my bullet points after I came out.
I was like, when did they set up this relationship, like Kong and Monarch? Like, when did they decide, like, hey, I need you to brush my teeth, bro. Can you, you know, help me out with that? I was like, this, okay, they figured this out at some point. So that was funny. I don't know. I just love that whole final battle. And then seeing the tooth pop out, you know, a Scar King. Yeah. And I was like, and then you see Kong like give like a little smile, like you laughed at me before, huh? I thought that was great. And there that slow-mo shot of all four of them just going at it to, like, that was just so cool.
The like zoom ins where you can see Kong's gums moving and everything was really cool.
It was incredible. What a great sequence. You know, at this point, we're so deep into this franchise and so many cities have been destroyed that I'm like, yeah, I feel bad. I feel bad for these cities for sure. But also, like, I don't know. What else are you going to do? You know, this is not like Superman. Like, or what was it called? What was that? Superman?
Batman?
No. Man of Steel. The Man of Steel movie, where, like, at the end of the movie, you know, Superman and Zod are just destroying the city, right? And, you know, you're thinking to yourself, like, just take it elsewhere. Go somewhere else. Stop all this damage and destruction, and all these people are getting hurt. We're well past that at this point. And it's just like, oh, well, I guess. You know, it's just like, destroy it's everything.
It is what it is. I do. We touched on it briefly earlier, but I really, really like Mothra's return and how it was interconnected with Gia's story. I thought it was a really good use of not only like grounding it in the mythology that they're building with the legacy of these creatures, but I also liked how that whole story explains why Godzilla has animosity towards Kong, because for him, he probably just sees another primate and thinks, I've dealt with one of them, he's below ground. For all he knows, Kong could be one of Scar King's minions. So it explains a lot about the dynamic between both of them as well, I think.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. But yeah, you mentioned Mothra, dude. I was so hyped to see Mothra return. I love the appearance in King of the Monsters.
Yeah.
And it's just such an awesome creature. And that wingspan, it's just such a beautiful, like, you know, flap of the wings in King of the Monsters. And then you know, the way she comes into battle and just like saves the day and then just dissipates and like kind of, I think just like disappears basically. You know, I was always hopeful that we'd get a return for that character, and finally we did. And it was so great. So great to see. I don't know how it happened, but I'm so glad it happened.
There's such a cool moment with her as well, where she saves the heave because it loses control and she like goes in and catches it. And that was really awesome.
Yeah. This is a fun movie, dude. This is a fun movie.
It really is. I was gonna say I've got a couple more points that I want to make if you want me to go through them quickly.
Hit them real quick. So we gotta wrap
The first is the fight sequence is really cool at the end because you see Godzilla and Kong working together a lot more. So they can kind of predict what each other's gonna do and they account for that and work together, which is building on GVK, where they sort of learn how to fight with each other, essentially. And then I really like the ending with Godzilla returning to the Colosseum. I thought that was really funny how clearly he enjoyed sleeping in there. So he was like, I'm going to go back and do it again.
Yeah.
And the final note, and I'm going to absolutely blow your mind we have now entered the era where in this franchise, we finally have King Kong, because at the end of the film, he goes back to all of the primates and is now overlooking at them. And I feel like that is very much setting us up for King Kong, where he'll be a different king to Scar King, because you have Scar King who ruled with pain and terror, and you're going to have Kong who rules with compassion and looking after the other primates. So you're going to get a real juxtaposition there in terms of the sense of ruler. And I'm really excited to see what they do with that.
Yeah, that's pretty true. I never really thought about that, but you could see it on their faces at the very end of the movie. You know, they're all like, oh, he's gone. I don't have to deal with that dude anymore. Thank God. So yeah. I'm excited to see like what, you know, that world looks like. Cause there surely will be like, you know, some holdovers probably, you know, from the Scar King era and stuff that maybe don't want, you know, this kind of life or whatever. But I think it'll be really cool. And we've never gotten that out of Kong, you know, in this franchise, at least. You know, it's always been just a lonely guy. And it'll be nice to have, you know, a kind of, it'll be interesting because like before the movie started, there was the Planet of the Apes trailer. And I was like, ooh, it's just going to become this, like, how are they going to differentiate it? Obviously they're massive, but like, and that's one thing I love is like, you know, this movie, the scale changes so well that like, you know, in the Hollow Earth, you see them and they just mostly look like a, you know, regular scale or something like that. But then their hand, you know, Kong's hand comes out in Egypt and it's, oh my God, I forgot how big he is. You know, it's so cool. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with all of those apes and how big they all are and what the Hollow Earth becomes. And, you know, if they find a new layer, a new level, like, I don't know, it'll be cool. Hopefully they touch on the Axis Mundi or something like that. You know, that would be cool.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing I was thinking as well, right? Is in where the Iwi are, there's like several portals in the ceiling. I bet one of those portals goes through to the Axis Mundi.
Ooh, you're probably right. Yeah. They could go anywhere in the world. That would be interesting. Ooh. That trip through the portals is such a blast to watch, you know? Seeing them go into the portal and just like visually it's really cool.
So much this time.
Oh,
yeah.
I know. Yeah, it went on and on and on. I feel like it looked a little different than like what we see in Monarch, but yeah, it was still really cool. So,
yeah.
You got anything else? Any other bullet points?
That is pretty much everything. I did make a point that says I love how they free Shimo and she helps at the end as well, which is good because it's the two bros coming together to free the person who's been subjugated, and I love that.
This is the second movie in a row in theaters where a bad guy in the movie just comes out and freezes a beach. So, you saw Ghostbusters last week and then this one this week. And I was like, man, and there's an Empire or a Frozen, you know, there's an Empire theme here because that was the Frozen Empire. Yeah. This is the new Empire. So.
I did think Scar King had very long fingers and I was shocked when he put the horned helmet on.
Tall, dark, and on that note, we'll wrap it up. Tom, where can everybody find you online?
If you really want to, you can find me at @Tom_Jurassic on Twitter and Instagram.
All right, man. Well, appreciate it. Thank you for joining me. And maybe we'll have a season 2 of Monarch to talk about because I have no idea what's in store.
If we don't, I'm rioting.
I hope so. Well, we got other things. We got Jurassic stuff to talk about. We'll be talking about Chaos Theory when that show debuts. We got a lot more to talk about.
Life will not be contained. Life breaks free, expands to new territories, and crashes through barriers painfully, maybe even dangerously, but there it is.
There it is.
I'm simply saying that life finds a way.
That'll do it for another episode of the Jurassic Park podcast. We appreciate each and every one of you for listening. I hope you did. I hope you enjoyed this one. I know it was a step aside from the Jurassic stuff. We always try to tie it in, and especially, you know, in this day and age when Gareth Edwards is attached, you know, to the next movie, there's a lot of connection to this universe potentially. So, you know, you get to see where Gareth Edwards came from and what it became today. And like I said, we kind of made those comparisons to what Jurassic has become and is becoming still. But I think there's plenty to enjoy, I think, for fans of Jurassic. And, you know, I think mostly it seems like if you're a fan of Jurassic, you like the big monsters. So why not go ahead and talk about Godzilla X Kong? And so thank you for at least, you know, listening to us for a little bit as we talk about movies that we love that are not even Jurassic. But a huge thank you to Tom, as always, for joining me once again. It feels like I think Tom's just, you know, on the show every week now. So what should we talk about next week, Tom? What do you think? What should we do? I'm sure he'll be back probably soon enough. And he did make a big announcement. So if you didn't check that out, please check out his feeds, Tales from a Jurassic World, over on YouTube. And of course, Tom Jurassic, I think. Is that what his handle is? Tom_Jurassic, maybe? Or just Tom Jurassic? I'm not sure. but go check out everything related to Tom and Tales from a Jurassic World. Thanks, as always, to our host, Podomatic, for letting us upload podcasts to the service each and every week. Stay safe out there. Be kind. Let's continue to fight for representation, change, and equality in the Jurassic franchise and other franchises, for that matter. Godzilla, MonsterVerse, let's do it. But also, more importantly, in the real world. Outside of the movies where everybody's living nowadays, whether it's a terrible place or a good place every now and then, sometimes. But let's continue to make this world a better place. I'm going to go ahead and hand things off to myself for the outro. Take it away.
Saddle up. Let's get this movable feast underway.
Continue the conversation with us on Threads and Instagram. Watch our content on TikTok and YouTube. Find us on the web at JurassicParkPodcast.com.
You'll find today's episode show notes, articles, contributor bios, and so much more. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, our website, and wherever else podcasts are found. So please be sure to follow along and share with your friends, family, and fellow Jurassic fans. If you haven't already, please give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We will read your Apple reviews at the end of most episodes, so be sure to spare no expense. Don't miss our Wednesday night live streams, toy hunts, reviews, in-depth bonus content, gameplay, event and theme park coverage on our YouTube channel. If you want to get a hold of us or participate in the Jurassic Mailbag, you can fill out the contact form on our website or send emails and MP3s to JurassicParkPod@gmail.com. Feel free to call our voicemail line at any time to leave us a message or just to say hi. That number is 732-825-7763. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, enjoy.